I call the Commerce Committee to order. We'll start out as a subcommittee. We're missing just one to get to a majority here, but we've got 20 bills on the agenda. We don't want to shortchange any testimony or any of the bills. However, if we don't get through this, we'll be back here tonight from 7 to 8 o'clock. So I would hope we could, you know, 7 o'clock to 8, because we've got the 20 bills. But I think if we move along, and I truly believe that most of these things are not things. These bills have been worked on. And for example, Senator Wieger, I think yours is ready to go on the first three, and then the liquor bills. I don't think we have to spend a lot of time on the liquor bills. So with that, Senator Wieger, you're always welcome to this committee, and good to see you. And at Senate File 2595, the scrap metal operators and scrap metals dealers. I know you've been working on this, and welcome, Mr. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee member. Senate File 2595 addresses a fee schedule for an automated property system. We talked last session about problems with people that might have a car stolen and suddenly it is converted into scrap, and law enforcement may be perplexed as to what happened, to say nothing about the consumer. And the need for an automated property system to get a better handle as to all of the material that is processed at yards, whether it's copper tubing, irrigation systems, testimony about the problems that, you know, in the rural areas. It's a concern. The county attorney, John Choi, had brought it to my attention, as well as some consumer groups. And you had placed a study and asked them to come up with a fee schedule for this system. And the industry has been working with law enforcement over the past year to do that. They're almost there. And this bill, which is supported, I believe, by all the parties, to get cut to the chase, would just extend the amount of time and for coming up with a system. There's some software that's being looked at to better perfect the reporting. But I have an A1 amendment, which has been worked out, that
you said almost there. Does the amendment get us there?
It gets us to where we need to be in the during the next year.
Okay. Yes, I see. You extended some of the.
Yes, it's an extension for Peace in the Valley to get it right.
Okay. Why don't we, Senator Goodwin, will move the A1 amendment and get the bill, and that's the dates, right? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. You may have your witnesses
say
a few words.
Mr. Chair, very briefly, recognizing you have 20 bills, from Minneapolis, I have Melissa Lesh, and from the Institute of Scrap Recyclers, Institute, Jeremy Estenchen, and Ms. Lesh.
If we think we're in pretty good shape, keep your remarks kind of brief, and we'll move on.
Mr. Chair and committee, thank you. Melissa Lesh, City of Minneapolis, and we really are just here to stand for questions. I think that Senator Wieger explained where the work group is at this point in time, and we're working together very well, and just need a little more time because the technology is a little more complicated than we anticipated. So we appreciate your support for allowing our work to continue.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
To the committee. Thank you, Ms. Lush.
Jeremy Essenson, Stinson Leonard Street here on behalf of the scrap industry. We really appreciate the fact that the other stakeholders were willing to push the dates back slightly so that we could do some further evaluation on some of the database technology. And we look forward to working with Senator Wieger, Senator Brown, Senator Kiffmeyer, all who had concerns with this bill early on.
Thank you.
That concludes our presentation.
Yeah, that's very good. That's about the quickest you've been, Senator. That's very good. We're going to need discussion from the members. Can we have a motion? And does this go right to the floor, I believe?
The motion.
So it's worked out. And Senator Brown, did you? Senator Goodwin.
Senate File 2595, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor.
Okay, then we're going to have Senator Brown second it, okay? And we don't need a second. I'm just willing. Okay, on the Goodwin motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Senator Eaton, is yours Peace in the Valley, I hope.
Yes, sir.
This is Senator Eaton, Senate File 1901, tanning equipment use age limit establishment. You have Mr. Schaefer, who I've talked to a couple of times with you, and it was a good discussion. But Senator Eaton, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill would prohibit minors from using indoor tanning facilities, and it would require proprietors to hang signage to that effect. Skin cancer is the most common cancer and is largely preventable. The incidence of melanoma, the deadliest form of skin cancer, has more than doubled since 1995 among young women. And research has conclusively linked indoor tanning to increased risk of melanoma, especially for children. And I also have the A1 amendment.
The A1 amendment, has that been distributed?
This A1 amendment represents peace in the valley.
We will be peace.
I'll move the amendment.
And understand. Senator Pappas moves the amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Eaton, Mr. Schaefer, or whoever wants to.
Yep. Go ahead.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. For the record, my name is Matt Schaefer with the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. And the amendment that the committee just adopted actually came in at the request of the American Tanning Association to make sure that this product was not going to inadvertently capture other products that tanning salons market, spray tans being an example. We would like to publicly thank the American Tanning Association for working with us on this, and as the Senator indicated, we believe we have peace in the valley.
That's good. That's what we like to hear in this committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator
We're ready.
Pappas.
I'd move that Senate File 1901 as amended be recommended to pass.
Does it have to go to the Health Committee, I heard?
It did.
That would be Senator Pappas' motion.
It went to Health Committee already.
Oh, did it?
No. So it has not?
This chair needs to go to the Health Committee.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was where you referred. Okay, I apologize.
On that motion of Senator Pappas, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Only, we've got one other.
Thank
Bill,
you, Mr. Chair and committee.
You're welcome. That's a non. A liquor related bill.
Oh, they're all liquor.
Well, we have Dahl on the back side. I don't.
He's over there.
Senator Sachs, you have to be somewhere else, don't you? But you. Why don't you take your bill? We're going to move into the. Oh, wait. Yeah, Senator Saxog has to be somewhere in a big hurry, so we'll get you up after him, if that's all right with you. Senator Saxog, home-brewed, naturally fermented fruit juices or beer products. Senate File 2604, Senator Saxog.
Well, we think there's quite a few of these people in South St. Paul, too, Mr. Chairman.
Ship them all to South St. Paul. Mr. Senator Sachs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, today I'm presenting Senate File 2604. This bill would allow for home-brewed beer to be available to public events. This bill does not allow for home-brewed to be sold at these events, but simply that it be allowed to be served. And with me today come from a couple of my home brewers from Grand Rapids, Steve Benson, who's president of Boreal Brewers Brew Club, and Tim Loesch, a home brewing instructor. Is Tim with us? Hi, Tim. And Chad Hodvet, home brewer. So with that, I'm going to ask them both to say a few words. Benson's got a...
The first question would be, did you bring any samples along? All right, proceed.
No.
So, yes.
Okay. Mr. Benson has a brief statement, and then we'll have a couple of comments, and then I ask for questions.
Okay. Welcome to the Minnesota Senate.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, the oldest written records of brewing... Steve Benson from Grand Rapids. The oldest written records of brewing date back to about 6,000 years B.C. and were impressed into clay tablets. Brewing and homebrewing has been a part of human endeavor since that era. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, and Benjamin Franklin were all avid homebrewers. President Obama's cooking staff began homebrewing beer in the White House 2 years ago. Homebrewing was common before, during, and after Prohibition, but it wasn't legal. The home fermentation of beer and wine became legal in the United States in 1978. Last May, Governor Bentley of Alabama signed a bill that made Alabama the 50th state to legalize homebrewing. They joined the other states by legalizing a fascinating craft that has been around for thousands of years and is now growing at a rapid pace. The American Homebrewers Association estimates that there are over a million Americans that brew at least once a year. Homebrewers come from all walks of life, are typically well-educated, and range from early 20s to well past retirement. Homebrewers tend to have a deep knowledge of beer or wine ingredients and the fermentation and brewing process. They're primarily attracted to fermenting due to the creative, artistic, and scientific aspects of this hobby. They approach their craft like fine wine, with respect and moderation. That's where Senate File 2604 comes in. Like any other craft, most people who put their time and creativity into homebrewed beer or wine are proud of it and want to share it. They want to enter it into competitions. They want to learn how to improve their brewing. They want other people to taste it. They want to talk about it. And they want to share the passion of creating it. Most homebrewers shop at local small businesses for their brewing supplies. I should point out Minnesota has a couple of the biggest homebrewing supply retail stores in the country. Some homebrewers move up and create small businesses, including craft breweries, about 90% of which were started by homebrewers. This bill allows homemade beer and wine to be removed from the home and shared through competitions and organized sampling events. Why should those events happen? The majority of American homebrewers enter competitions. There are over 400 homebrew competitions held in the U.S. each year. Judging provides feedback and recognition to homebrewers, helping them improve their skills. Public tastings allow others to sample beers and wines that they may never have tried before. They learn which craft beer styles have the flavors, aromas, and textures that they like, and they add those to their list when they consider purchasing commercial beer and wine from a liquor store, a bar, or a brew pub. That benefits Minnesota breweries. Please pass this bill and help us share a respected, popular craft that has roots deep in history.
Thank you very much, Mr. Benson. Yeah, how about the other two? Did you wish to say a couple of words?
Chad Hotfoot, Grand Rapids, Minnesota, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. We respect your time, and we're available just to answer questions at this point.
That's good. Sir, do you agree with that? You got a red sweater?
For the record, my name is Tim Lesh, and I live in Rosemont, Minnesota, and I'm here to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay, good. Any members of the committee wish to? Senator Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is question is open to anyone. I don't know anything about the home brewing process, but is there any potential for public health risk with this? I don't know if bacteria can grow in this or.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Brown and members of the committee, home brewing is a very safe craft. The beer itself is not a capable host for any pathogens. According to the American Homebrewers Association, one of the questions that's commonly asked is homebrewing safe? And there are no known pathogens that can exist in beer. It's acidic because of the antibiotic characters of hops and the fact that there's alcohol in it. It just won't be a host for bacteria. Homebrewing is safer than cheese. Okay. The other thing is our process doesn't involve any high-pressure systems that we use. We're just boiling a liquid, and we don't produce any flammable gases, so the process of creating it is very safe, too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further, anybody in the audience wish to be heard on this? Senator Pappas, did you have a
I'd make the motion and just move that Senate File 2604 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill.
On that motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion fails. That's a good point, Senator Pappas. We're not, or this is for possible inclusion in one bill at the end of the, whenever we get to it. So I thank you for saying that. But that's what we're going to do. We're going to add, like we, I think this committee's always done it, get an omnibus bill at the end of the day. Thank you, gentlemen
Thank you,
Grand
Mr.
Rapids
Chair, members.
And Rosemont.
Yeah. Thank you.
Allstins from Grand Rapids?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah. That's I won't comment there.
Sandy Lake,
my next name.
Thank you.
All right, Senator Wicklund and then Hayden.
Let
me try to repeat again. If we could get done by 2 o'clock, we won't have to meet. Or 2:30. If we can get done by 2:30, we don't have to meet at 7 o'clock tonight. So that's my hope. But if it doesn't work, that's fine. Senator Wicklund, welcome to the committee. Senate File 1697, a Richfield on sale wine and malt liquor license authorization.
Thank you, Chair Metzen, and thank you, committee, for hearing the bill today. It's Senate File 1697, as he stated. The purpose of this bill is to allow Richfield to issue an on-sale wine license and an on-sale malt liquor license to a person who is an owner of a junior hockey team or a person holding a concessions or management contract with the city or the team owner for beverage sales at the Richfield Ice Arena. This would allow for consumption on the premises only, and authorizes sales on all days of the week to persons attending junior hockey league games at the arena. Last year, Richfield had an opportunity to work with a new team being formed as part of the North American Hockey League, and Richfield Ice Arena is now going to be the home rink for this new team. There are three NAHL teams in Minnesota, the others being in Austin and Cloquet. As part of the arrangements, remodeling work is going on at Richfield Ice Arena, and also they would like to be able to sell wine and beer. So under the current law, they don't have the authority to issue this license, and so they would like to be able to gain that authorization through this bill. Okay. Today with me is Steve Devich. He's the city manager for Richfield, and I'll let him speak more about the reasons for wanting to get this legislation passed. Thank you.
Mr. Devich, welcome to the Minnesota Senate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm only going to make some very brief comments, and that is we did have the opportunity to strike a partnership up with the newest junior hockey league team here in Minnesota, and again, using our ice arena as their home rink. It's an exciting opportunity for the city of Richfield. I think it's an exciting opportunity for the metro area to have a junior hockey league team. As you know, the high school players after high school need a place, some of them, to hone their skills to move on to either Division I or maybe the NHL, depending upon how good they are. And this is one of those opportunities. Like anything else, like any other sporting event, whether you're watching the Wild, the Twins, the Vikings, you know, you like to have a cup of beer along with your snacks as you're watching the sporting event. And that's simply all we're asking for here, is to have that opportunity with our junior hockey league team. It would only be for service during the junior hockey league, and we'd have police on duty. We would have responsible seller, and would do everything in our power to ensure that that's carefully monitored. Thank you for your consideration.
This is done in other cities across the Midwest, particularly in Moorhead and all around. But is this the first year for the junior team in Richfield?
This was the first year. They started off their season. The inaugural season, we were able to put together a local license to do 3-2 beer to work with them. And as the senator said, we're now expanding the ice arena to accommodate their team. And we have one of the most unique arenas. You have all-around viewing on our rink, so that's what makes it so attractive to watch this kind of semi-professional kind of hockey.
It's pretty good hockey, too. Very good hockey.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Goodwin.
Question. Has the city council looked this over and agreed to it? Or?
Senator, Mr. Chair, absolutely. The Richfield City Council has looked at this and heartily endorsed it. We put together special legislation for at the city to allow us to serve 3-2 beer for this season, waiting for the opportunity to sell the strong beer. So, yes, absolutely. We're all excited in Richfield about this opportunity.
Probably draw a lot of fans, too, you know. Huh? And people are like this level of hockey. But Senator Housley, you should this is hockey stuff here, Senator Housley. I know you would be interested in it. But
I have my Fisher people out there.
Okay. This allows for Richfield to have an on-sale wine and malt liquor license for their new junior league hockey team. And so any further discussion? Anybody Senator Pappas, we're putting you to work today. Yes. Senator Pappas.
Just trying to help the chair move the meeting along.
Thank you. Well, you don't want to come back tonight either, Brian.
I have my committee's meeting tonight, so okay. I just moved that Senate Bill 1697 be recommended for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Chair and committee members.
Senator Hayden, Senate File 1703. American Swedish Institute of Unsealed Intoxicating Liquor License Authorization. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You may proceed.
Yes. I have Senate File 1703, a bill relating to, obviously, liquor at the American Swedish Institute. I'm going to just turn it over for the sake of brevity over to the President and CEO of the American Swedish Institute, Mr. Bruce Karstedt.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's a privilege to be here. For the record, again, my name is Bruce Karstedt. I'm the President and CEO of the American Swedish Institute. I suppose, brief about this. The American Swedish Institute has long had a liquor license to support the operations of its food services and cafe. Due to greatly increased traffic and visitors as a result of the expansion of our campus in 2012, we came to the conclusion that it would be best business practice to employ a third-party firm to manage the food services and cafe on our behalf. The legislation at present only allows a liquor license to be held by the American Swedish Institute, and it would be best and would be in alignment with the circumstances that exist at other nonprofit cultural institutions like the Walker Arts Center or the Guthrie Theater to be able to have that liquor license held by the third-party operator, and that's the purpose of this change. It's not an expansion in our service, but simply one intended to support the increased levels of business and to create the possibilities for the third-party firm to take on the liquor license.
Yeah, we allow this in other areas, so I think we're all right here. Any further discussion on this one? Senator Goodwin, we're going to let you get this
Mr.
one away
Chair,
from Senator Pappas.
I will. I'm ready. Make motion to pass Senate File 1703 into the omnibus
possible liquor inclusion.
Possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill.
Okay. Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Senate File 2566 is also a Hayden bill. Minneapolis Institute of Arts on sale license, liquor license issue. Authority. Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I now have Senate File 2566 relating to on-sale liquor at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts. I'm going to, for brevity's sake, turn it over to Mr. Larry Redmond to briefly go over the bill.
Mr. Redmond, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Larry Redmond, representing the Minneapolis Institute of Art. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the Minneapolis Institute of Art has had a liquor license at their location in Minneapolis since the 1970s. What Senator Hayden's bill seeks to do is to make a change in the statute that would still would have to operate completely with the authority of the city of Minneapolis, in which it's located, but it would allow it to, not unlike the Swedish Institute bill, to be able to issue a license directly to the vendor. We believe for the same business reasons that's a more advantageous way to handle these in the future. But the other thing that the bill does is it allows multiple licenses to be in that plant, in the Institute of Art, should the city of Minneapolis choose to. The important thing, I think, to understand that as to why we're seeking that is the Institute of Art's very large building. It's 426,500 square feet. And increasingly, in museums, large museums, the Minneapolis Institute of Art, by the way, is one of the largest art museums in the nation. in a building of that size. More typically, the public is now looking for a variety of different kinds of activities. The Institute believes that in its long-term purpose, it's better to have more than one vendor. And in different parts of the building. There are also some issues that have to do with compact and contiguous, which allows them some versatility within that space and so forth. So what this bill would do is would modernize the statute by allowing it to have the license in a concessionaire's name. By the way, we do that in other parts of the statute for the Walker Arts Center, the Guthrie and whatnot. And likewise, it would allow for multiple licenses. And by the way, the statute also allows that for the Target Center and for the new football stadium being built in Minneapolis right now. So there's really nothing new here, but it'd be new for the Institute.
Okay, sounds good. Any further discussion on this? Senator Brown, do you think this is pretty good? It's all right with you?
Sure.
Okay. Senator Brown moves it. Senate File 2566 will be moved and for possible inclusion on the major bill. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Yeah, is Senator Hoffman here?
Pappas.
I know Pappas is here. She's yes. Okay, is yours all worked out? Is that the one that might need a little fixing later or something?
Fixing later. I mean, we can present it and you can.
Okay, I think we'll go to. Excuse me, Ms. Senator Hoffman. You're not. What's that?
Thank you.
Senate File 1703, American Swedish.
No.
Excuse me. Brooklyn Park Wedding Event Center. On sale intoxicating liquor license authorization. Senator Hoffman, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would have been earlier, but the door wasn't working between 123 and Senator Stump's office. So,
is that the one I broke yesterday?
No. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, it's real simple. There's a Senate File 1720 authorizes on-sale liquor license for a new wedding event center that's going to be in Brooklyn Park on the beautiful Mississippi River overlooking 610 Bridge. And so it reestablishes what once was an active production business, and it would be a jobs developer for our area, both in Champlin and Brooklyn Park. So I stand for any questions.
Okay. Any questions of the committee members or anybody in the audience for or against this, Senator Pappas?
Mr. Chairman, do you have a resolution of support from the City of Brooklyn Park? Have they already acted on this?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, I have a letter from the Brooklyn Park City Administrator saying, you know, and it, as well as the companion over in the House with Representative Hortman. So I don't have it with me.
But they have indicated they.
This is a trust me one. We, well, I don't know. You better get some proof of that down here in a hurry.
I've just got one thing to say.
The council has something to offer here.
Mr. Chairman, members, I think if the decision is ultimately to include this in the omnibus liquor bill, I just suggest we put in some boilerplate language that we usually do that says that all provisions of the liquor code. Not inconsistent with this, continue to apply things like dram shop insurance and those sorts of things. It's pretty standard language, and I don't see it included in the original draft of the bill.
Okay. We will, that's all right as an oral amendment. Senator Kosoki moves that language. Is that all right with you?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members, absolutely.
Okay. On that amendment offered by Senator Kosoki, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Any further discussion? We need a motion as amended.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that Senate File 1720 as amended be recommended to pass for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill. Consider if Senator Hoffman has a letter of support from his city.
I didn't hear possible. That last part. We that's a trust me one. Okay. On that motion, all those in favor, you ever say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much.
Are you ready, Sandy? You
want to yours now?
Okay. Senate File 2014, Senator Pappas. Micro distillery sales expansion authorization.
Mr. Chairman, I have an author's amendment, the A1 amendment.
Okay. The A1 amendment, can we pass that out?
agreed upon?
No.
Mr. Chairman, I withdraw my amendment.
Yeah, that's probably good at this point.
Still being negotiated. Okay. Mr. Chairman, this bill is to allow micro-distilleries to offer cocktails on the premises, and also it would allow them to sell their products either directly or through wholesalers. And at this point, it also allows them to sell bottles on the premises, and that's the part that's still being negotiated. There are currently four operating distilleries in Minnesota and approximately 20 more in development. Distilleries are located all around Minnesota, including Halleck, Osakis, Duluth, Northfield, and around the Twin Cities. Many states, including Colorado, Oregon, New York, and Wisconsin, have recently updated their laws to encourage the micro-distillering industry to thrive. The state of Oregon currently has over 400 Oregon-made micro-distilled products. Our advantages here in Minnesota are fresh water, a tremendous agricultural sector, combined for Minnesotans' love for local products. This makes Minnesota the perfect place for this industry to thrive. Why should we ship our grain and our money to Kentucky when spirits can be produced right here in Minnesota? As I mentioned, it consists of three components: the bottle sales, the cocktail sales, and self-distribution. And I have here to testify Chanel Montana.
Yes. I think I understand this, Bill. I think that the issue still is to be resolved is at the size of the bottle.
The size of the bottle. That's right, Mr.
As far
Chairman.
As I know, and I think we'll probably move this out of here, but the understanding we're still
negotiating the size of the bottle.
Introduce right. Your members or your
Miss Montana
visitors here.
Thank you, Chair Metzen. My name is Chanel Montana, and I'm the president of the Minnesota Distillers Guild. And thank you, Senator Pappas, for introducing the bill. We have almost 20 members of our guild from around Minnesota, and those members are investing hundreds of thousands and, in many cases, millions of dollars into the state currently. And they are really looking at the micro-distilling industry as the next big craft boom. Minnesota is the perfect place for a micro-distillery. We have all the grain here, and we oftentimes use that grain in the products that we already drink. However, those products are produced in other states. We are looking to bring that industry local, create jobs here in Minnesota, spur economic development and tourism by using that grain that we have here to produce high-quality spirits. Many of the people that I have, or all the people that I have up here today with me, have invested a lot of money into the state, and we are looking for the ability to really showcase our products, and that's the bill that you have before you today. There are three components: bottle sales, cocktail rooms, and self-distribution. Those would provide us parity with our sister industries, the wineries and the breweries. This not only allows us to have an industry, but really allows our industry to thrive and to contribute greater to the Minnesota economy. I know you're very short on time, so I just want to thank you. I do believe that there is a possible compromise for the bottle sales. I know that is the most controversial portion of the bill right now. I think we are working towards that, and there is something that we can compromise on this year. And so I would encourage all members to learn about those options, and I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, get that worked out before we get it to the floor. Yeah, Mr. McManus, who were first, or I visited at length with Mr. McManus the other day. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Chair Metzen. Ladies and gentlemen of the Commerce Committee, I'm Robert McManus, president of the 11 Wells Spirits Company, located in the pipe shop of the formerly abandoned Hams Brewery, less than 10 minutes from where we sit. I have two brief points today that I'd like to share with you and an invitation. My two points are, one, that the magnified economic impact that a distillery can impart. Second, ways that a distillery can become an incredibly powerful change agent in some disadvantaged Minnesota communities. So my first point is on the economic impact of a distillery. During the course of the construction of our distillery, our general contractor has hired numerous subcontractors. When fully operational, I anticipate we'll have at least 5 employees. The entire investment in the distillery upon this completion will be well over $1 million, including a matching investment from the City of St. Paul's STAR program for neighborhood revitalization. Our investment, however, has been magnified by located our business at Hams, where there are two other startup businesses. One is a brewery, craft brewery relocating, and the second is an urban farm. Through our pooled infrastructure investment, our businesses and the City of St. Paul's Housing and Redevelopment Authority have gotten a lot more bang for our buck. But don't take my word on it. Go ask Mayor Chris Coleman about the city's plans for this site and what they've done. Passage of this bill will diversify ways for a startup liquor maker to earn back their investment and attract more entrepreneurs into this industry. Second point I have is that the distillery can be a dynamic change agent for economically disadvantaged Minnesota communities, both rural and urban. As Chanel mentioned, Far North Spirits. Last year, Mike and Sherry Swanson relocated from St. Paul to their hometown of Halleck, population 966, to found Far North Spirits on Mike's fourth-generation farm. Passage of this bill will enable future distillers to add value to these commodity crops and diversify the rural economic base. Closer to home, in our urban setting on the east side, Whirlpool and 3M are long since gone, and I could share countless stories with you about the people that I've met that are really excited about what we're doing and bringing hams back to life. Our pipe fitter began his career as a fitter in the very pipe shop where we are located in 1980. Truck driver last summer came by making a delivery and told me of visiting his machinist father in the blacksmith shop. Excuse me. When he asked me, I told him we're making a whiskey distillery there. And he looked at that and he said, my father loved his beer, but he loved his whiskey, too. And he, quote, he said, Pop would be proud. Okay. And finally, on to my invitation. A few weeks ago, I sat down with Chair Metzen to talk about this bill and what we're doing here. And he said, well, given the proximity of your distillery, we should have the committee on down for a visit. So we're hereby inviting the Senate committee and the House committee to come on out in September to meet with all of the Minnesota distillers. There's a few of them around the room here as well, and learn about distilling and demonstrate how passage of this bill in this session will enable Minnesota distillery law to become competitive with surrounding states and lead to tax revenue growth and jobs in the near future. So have a great summer. We look forward to seeing you in the fall and talking to you about what we've done over the summer. Thank you.
A great summer. I hope it gets here. We're trying to get out to your place at Ham's, Billy, to see what's going on there and what you're doing. Sir, did you want to say a few words?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. My name's Joel Vikra. I am the founder and distiller at Vikra Distillery. We're located in Senator Reinert's district in the old Pellucci building, adjacent to the lift bridge in Canal Park. A building that has a long history of manufacturing, but that has been silent for about 30 years now. And now there's the sweet sound of forklifts and work happening there again. 18 months ago, my wife and I decided to move back to Duluth from Boston. We wanted to live in a place where we could be rooted, in a place with amazing natural resources and community. Since then, we have distilled that place, the essence of that place, into this bottle. This is our Boreal Spruce Gin. It contains Lake Superior water. It contains 7 pounds of malted barley, grown in Minnesota and malted in Minnesota. It contains botanicals foraged from the North Woods, areas north of Duluth. And as we begin to make whiskey as well, we're putting that whiskey away in white oak barrels from Minnesota white oak, coopered in Park Rapids, Minnesota. This bottle on Saturday won a gold medal at the American Craft Distillers Association.
Oh, congratulations.
That's now, on the shelf, this bottle's been on the shelves in Minnesota for about a month. It sells for around $30. 30% of that cost goes into raw materials and packaging. This is a premium product. 15% of that goes into tax. 20% goes to the distributor. 20% goes to the retailer. That leaves us with 15% to run our business and ideally pay back the $1.2 million we have invested in Duluth so far. Now, I like my distributor and I like my retailer. This business would not work without them. But at that competition where we won the gold medal, I was up against competition from New York, Colorado, Washington, Oregon, and numerous other states that have created legislation that has made craft distilling possible. Now, Minnesota has already taken two important steps by lowering the licensing fee and by making tasting possible at distilleries. We wouldn't be here at all if not for those steps, and we thank you for them. But we won't be able to be competitive business-wise against those other states without passing this bill. We want to be able to provide visitors with a complete experience. On May 9th, we're opening a visitor center at our distillery on Lake Avenue in Canal Park. If we can provide people with a cocktail and a tour, and at the end of that tour sell them a bottle, it's going to be enormously beneficial for us. But it's also beneficial for the retailer and the distributor. We are educating the consumer. At the end of it, they take home a fine glass. It's called the Glencairn glass. They've learned about smelling the product, the aromas, the taste, the flavors. They're going back to their hometown a more educated consumer. We hope that they'll then seek out our product on the shelves, but they'll also seek out other craft products. What that means is that they're buying premium products from their liquor stores and their bars, which make the retailers and the distributors more money. So we believe that the three provisions of this bill are a win-win. And in fact, we've seen success from similar legislation in Minnesota. Craft beer and craft wine have both become tremendous contributors, and it's because of laws just like this. So we thank you for your consideration. And we also invite you to come visit us in Duluth and hope you will. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good testimony. Senator, did you? Mr. Magnoli, I see you in the. Did you want to testify, you guys? Or, well, come on forward then. You're not listed, so name, Rick. Give us your names for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli, McGranche Law Firm, on behalf of the MLBA and MMBA. I just want to say that we are extremely excited about artisan distilling and the small distilling. As you heard, there's some excitement about the prospect of doing this. As you, some of you may know, spirits, particularly whiskey, is incredibly hot in the United States and the world right now. It is the hip thing to do. I think that the cocktail room license, the ability to do that, offers an opportunity for people, as they said, to sample the product, to become more, to make the product sort of the way things have gone with craft beer. We still do have some concerns about the direct sale across from the front door, the direct off sale. We've been in conversations and plan to continue the conversations. We're not sure if we can get there this year, but I've said to them, I've said to a number of the senators here, this is possible to do. We will probably get it done. We'd like to get it done next year.
That's the size of the bottle are you talking about now?
Yep. Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I had another sidebar discussion. Are you talking about next year doing what?
Or didn't the sale of the bottles directly to the public from the distillery.
Okay, you're not.
We're not perfectly comfortable
with that yet.
With that.
Okay.
Idea yet.
Sir.
Mr. Chairman, Chris Georgikis representing Wirtz Beverage Minnesota, one of the state's wine and spirits wholesalers, also a member of the Minnesota Wine and Spirits Wholesale Association. Mr. Chairman, members like Mr. Bagnoli, my colleague representing the retailers, wholesalers have some concerns about this bill. We appreciate the proponents' testimony indicating their willingness to work towards a compromise. Mr. Chairman and members, I would just state that I think from a wholesaler's perspective, we have no objection to the recodification we have here of last year's allowance for micro distilleries to provide samples. We don't have an objection towards the cocktail room provision of the bill, but like Mr. Bagnoli, we do have some serious concerns about the self-distribution that's allowed under the bill at present. We think that the appropriate and balanced social controls that are built into the state's three-tier system should continue with respect to these products, and we'd be happy to engage in conversation with the committee and with the proponents.
Okay. With that, anybody else in the audience? I know Senator Pappas has agreed to that there's still a little work in progress, but Senator Reinhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would just, I don't see where Joel went, but if you're in Duluth, stop by. What they've done with their space is pretty amazing. And frankly, for members and folks in the audience, Joel and his wife Emily are the new face of Duluth. I mean, that is where our heart and spirit is in young entrepreneurs. So excited and proud to have them in my district.
I think it'd be good for the committee to maybe visit a couple of these places and not just say if you're visiting the area. I think it'd be helpful for us to know.
Let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Ryder Pace.
And now we're approving samples, right?
Senator Ryder Pace.
Senator Ryder is going to pay for dinner that night, too.
Mr. Chairman, I would hope that as we consider this bill and the mix of the other bills, we also make sure that we're providing some parity between the wine industry, the craft beer industry, and the micro distillery industry, and that what we do for one, we do for others. I just think that we should be fair with how we treat these different industries.
It seems to me we've been kind of going in that direction the last couple of sessions, so I don't know if we're totally there, but we have been moving. So, Senator Pappas, did you wish to make a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would just move that Senate Bill 2014 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill.
Okay. On the Pappas motion on Senate File 2014 for possible inclusion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Pappas. Senator Reinhart, are you ready to go?
I am, Mr. Chair.
You've got three bills. We're going to try to do them all at.
Yes.
We're moving along, trying to avoid that 7 o'clock meeting, but we're in good shape so far, folks. Senator Reinhart, we have Senate File 2029 and Senate File 2374 and 2375. Welcome again. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You've been here all afternoon. Senator Reinhart.
Proud member of your committee, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Members of the committee, I've got three bills which I've asked for consideration for us just to discuss them all at once because they're directly interrelated. Mr. Chairman, I do have three testifiers that I know of, and I suspect there are a couple others. Members, the two bills that I'm bringing forward, I will be up front, relate to the Sunday sales issue that I've worked on extensively. About 2 weeks ago, we had a press conference that sort of laid out seven different options for the legislature to consider. These are what I would call the baby steps. That is to allow growler sales on Sundays and allow taproom sales on Sundays. And, you know, members, I would make three arguments for you to consider in this. One is that the growler sales are primarily a product that's not in our stores presently in Minnesota. As we know, we have a three-tier system, which prohibits our brew pubs from bottling. So despite the fact that in Duluth you can get a bottled brew pub from the South Shore Ale in Ashland, Wisconsin, in Duluth stores, you cannot get Canal Park Brewery or the Brew House product in stores because we ban that option for brew pubs to bottle. So, two, as you'll hear from these folks, they're already open 7 days a week. So one of the arguments we've heard often from the stores is they don't want the extra day of expenses without revenue. Well, in this case, they already have the extra day of expenses without the option to gain that revenue. And three, and I know many of us on this committee, the chairman included, try to do what we can, especially in the area of small business. And as we've seen this burgeoning micro industry in Minnesota, as you just saw, I didn't know that Joel was going to be here, but I've had that chance to get to know Joel and his wife Emily well. We've especially seen it in Duluth, that the micro industry is booming. We even have If you come to Duluth at the chairman's invitation, there's a side business that conducts tours of all the new micro industries that have sprouted up. If we want to help those small businesses, as many of us I know do, the best way to do that is some of these in-house sales where they have their largest profit of margin, and Joel sort of spoke to that earlier. So, Madam Chair, with that, I'm going to allow Badger the Brewer from Canal Park Brewery to speak, and then we have a testifier on the taproom provision. And before I turn the mic over, Madam Chair, I just say the third bill is what I'm calling the Growler Freedom Bill. Members, you may not know this, but right now state law says that if you want to fill a growler from a particular establishment, you must buy the growler from them. So if you happen to be a fan of two or three different microbrews, you must own two or three different growlers. And what that bill would say is if you own a growler, take it where you want, get it filled there. I would note, as I've shared with the brewers, that it does give them the right to refuse to fill one if that doesn't fit their business model, or if Senator Brown, you would never do this, brings in one that's 3 years old and has some crud in it. They can say, no, I'm not comfortable filling that. So I might do that. You never would. So with
never
that, Madam
never.
Chair, with your permission, I would turn it over to the testifiers.
Absolutely. So welcome, Senator Brown.
Madam Chair, I'm just not sure which bill we're hearing right now out of the three.
Madam Chair, Senator Brown, it's 2029, which is the Growler Sunday Sales, 2374. I'm sorry, 2029 is tap rooms, 2374 is the Growler Sunday Sales, and then 2375 is tap rooms, 2374 is growlers, and 2029 is the Growler Freedom Bill.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Reiner, we're hearing all three at once?
Yeah. The testifiers are all on both sides going to speak to all three. Right.
Senator Brown, and we'll take separate motions, but we'll hear them. So go ahead with your testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I want to thank the chair and committee for having us out. It's nice to have a voice at the table as a young industry like this. I'm Ben Flatham. I'm with Excelsior Brewing Company, also speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Brewers Association, a group we formed last year to work with folks like you on issues like this. So I want to speak on behalf of our industry and how this bill is actually supporting something you folks have already done in the past. As far as when the Surly bill went through, opened up taproom sales for us, you saw what happened. You saw the proliferation of craft breweries, the creation of business. Folks like us now in our second year of business are quadrupling our capacity because of the revenue gained from the taproom bill and from what it's offered us. We're doubling our employee base with potential for more coming on down the road. I know folks over at Fulton, they're building a 50,000-square-foot brewery, and I can safely say that adding the option to serve pints on Sundays only enhances that for us. You look at Fulton, where they're next to the Twin Stadium, you look at the option that folks have 6 days a week. They can go to a game, come get a pint after. It doesn't make sense that they can't do it on the seventh day just because it happens to be Sunday. We're absolutely in favor of that. We're absolutely in favor of having the option to get growlers out the door on Sundays as well. For a lot of us, that includes beers that we don't normally produce, we don't normally distribute. It's only in-house that you can purchase it. It's exclusive from what we would sell to liquor stores, from what we'd sell to other establishments. So it's nice for us to have that opportunity on Sundays as well, while patrons are in, to take the beer they've been enjoying and take it home with them. We're currently situated out in Excelsior, so we've got a few wineries next to us. We have some great craft wine out in our area, but they have the option of producing and selling bottles on Sundays already. And that is a huge thing for us, as far as we want to make sure we support in a symbiotic way with our craft industry out on that side of town. And if they have another reason as far as coming to a brewery, they'll maybe be more apt to visit wineries, to visit other things that day as well. Being that Excelsior is a tourist-driven town, having an extra day of the week like Sunday is absolutely huge for us. It would mean the world just to have the opportunity to operate on a day like, thinking middle of July on a Sunday, when you have this whole new crowd of people. I also want to say that we're looking for more opportunities for growth, as far as not doing this as a money grab, not doing this as a way to circumvent any kind of three-tier system. We're doing this as an opportunity for us to continue our growth as an industry, to continue adding employees, to continue adding opportunities for our community. I mean, we make good beer, but we also try to provide a place where people can gather, meet their neighbors, talk about the issues in the community, the issues in their lives, get to know each other, and that's the social aspect of beer that we do appreciate having more opportunities get out. The only thing that I would like to say is that we are completely behind the bill as it's written, but we would ask that you look at a provision tying the food sales to taproom pint sales on Sundays. But other than that, it's exactly what we would ever ask for. We'd appreciate the opportunity to grow some more and hopefully have you out for a beer on a Sunday afternoon sometime this summer. So thank you again.
Thank you. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Reinert, I know you've been working on this a long time, so I figure you're going to know this right off the top of your head. But tell me the role of local licensing jurisdictions and how that comes into play with this change.
Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, local licensing units still have the power to issue or not issue the license to do that. So, A, it maintains local control, and B, it also, for some, is going to generate some additional licensing revenue.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Reinert, your next testifier? Senator Dames.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question, I don't know who can answer this, but not knowing much about liquor, do these establishments come under the dram shop laws?
Yes, I believe we do. As a taproom, yes.
I believe we do.
Yeah.
So,
yes, we do apply with that as well, yes.
Senator Dames.
Madam Chair, considering that you do follow that and you're required to, what kind of an exposure are we going to be opening up if we allow growlers to be refilled? So if you're putting your product in somebody else's growler and there becomes an issue, are we going to be opening up a real can of worms here trying to decide whose product is in whose container?
Well, I mean, if I could speak to that, actually. A big thing for us as breweries, obviously, we're still going to be selling these with a seal, marking on caps which beer is which, what they're actually getting. I'm not necessarily going to speak to the growler fill law with multiple breweries, but I can test to any kind of safety or sanitation issues. It's obviously up to the brewer's discretion whether or not they would want to fill another brewery's growlers, but they would be clearly marked as to what the contents were inside when it is filled.
Madam Chair,
Reiner.
Just to reiterate that point, there is a minimum level of labeling that must take place in order for it to be refilled and resealed. We had a photo. I'm not sure we were able to get it to you in time, but you know, right across the border in Superior, Wisconsin, they're actually putting out sort of a generic growler that has those standards on it for people that know they want to go to more than one place. Again, I would emphasize that no one is required to refill. If they feel it doesn't meet the standard, it doesn't, it exposes them to any additional liability, they can say no.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. Senator Ryder.
Hello, I'm Matt Badger Kolish, and I'm the brewmaster with Canal Park Brewing Company. I'd like to thank Madam Chair and the rest of the committee for listening to our perspective from a craft brewery today. And thank you, Senator Reinert, for bringing this issue up and contacting us, inviting us to come down. I hope you all have this handout we put together. It's a little flyer about beer on Sundays and Sunday sales perspectives from a craft brewery, that being the Canal Park Brewing Company. It sort of lays out all of our concerns and a few bullet points that we think are important, and I'll just emphasize a few of those, and for the sake of brevity, let you all read in depth yourself. Basically, we as a brew pub are open on Sundays, so we operate our business 7 days a week. We have the same labor costs, utility costs, taxes to pay. We have the same accountability to our lenders, and we have the same hurdles as any other day of the week. So our inability to sell growlers to our patrons inhibits one of our avenues of income by 1/7. For us, this is pretty substantial. We're a small business in year one of just over year one of operation. And for us in particular, where we're located in Canal Park, we see about 3 million visitors a year, many of them from out of state. And we're surrounded by hotels that a great number of people check out of on Sunday. And all they're looking to do is take a little piece of Duluth back home with them. So not only is this a loss in sales to us, and sort of an inconvenience for our staff to the point where we've been begged by to put these on our coolers, and this is a sign that, that tries to explain a little bit to people that we're not allowed to do this according to Minnesota state law. So we actually have been forced to put a sign up to deny sales. And not only does it deny sales, but it's our one avenue to get outside of our doors and grow our brand. Our consumers are all too willing to give us word-of-mouth advertising. Any entrepreneur knows this is the most valuable form and most sought-after form of advertising there is, and we're denied that when they can't take this piece of our brewery and our city back with them and share it with their family and friends. And that equates to for us, a loss of ability to grow our brand. So not only are we seeing a loss in sales, a loss of word-of-mouth advertising, but a loss of ability to grow. And this, to us, is a loss in job creation as well. We would love to be able to expand our growler sales to the point, for example, one of our fellow breweries, Fitgers, they sell enough growlers to warrant a whole filling station and put a great deal of time and energy into that. It's about a full-time job for a person to be filling growlers for those folks, and we'd like to get to that point as well. So lastly, as Senator Reiner pointed out, is that we're across the bridge. We're just a bridge away from an adjoining state that allows growler fill sales on Sundays, and breweries over there aren't restricted by the same confines as we are. So they're allowed to put their product out in the three-tier system, which we would love to be able to do, but until we can, we'd love to be able to sell on Sundays as well. And lastly, we'd be seeing parity also with the wine industry, where we understand that they have the ability to sell wine on Sundays. And I'll leave it at that and answer any questions you may have.
Just one.
Senator Gazelka?
Actually, just one quick question. This gives me away, but exactly how much beer does a growler hold?
64 ounces.
Thank you.
Senator Brown?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Reinert, Bill 2029, I am concerned about that someone else's product could be put in a container that's not their own. You'd mentioned that there is minimum labeling requirements. What are those minimum requirements?
Senator Reiner?
Chair and Senator Brown, I'd ask counsel to help us answer that question.
Just a minute when I find counsel.
Believe it or not, members, I'm not a big drinker, and in fact, during session, I don't drink at all. So,
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, what was the question?
Senator Brown, if you could repeat the question for counsel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Counsel, I asked, what are the minimum labeling requirements for refilling these growlers?
Madam Chair, Senator Brown, if you look at, for example, SF 2374, the language of it, you can see what they are currently. And in, for example, line 1.17 talks about how growlers have to be packaged and the plug or stopper that is associated with that, and a paper or plastic strip over the stopper, which identifies the source of the malt liquor. So those are kind of the core requirements for growler sales.
Okay.
Senator Brown?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Reinert, once that bottle's opened, won't that identification be gone?
Senator Reinert.
Senator Brown, since I've never personally filled a growler, I'll turn that over. But it seems to me that the ability to, as line 1.22 asks or requires for them to put the name and address of the brewer on the bottle, that they can certainly meet that provision without having to do it at the top. But
Yes, we're to the best of my knowledge, we're required to have the government label warning on the growler, along with our name, address, location, what is in the growler, so which brand it is, and the alcohol percent by volume. Those are the requirements, and we commonly fill that fill the ABV and the label, the brand on the cap. Many of us use stickers and seal the bottle as well, so it does not end up being removed other than the cap. And, of course, the name and address remains, the brand, style, and percent ABV. That's on the cap usually itself.
Thank you, Mr. Collish.
Madam Chair, then what you're saying is there's a label directly on the bottle, or it sounds, I'm not sure if you're saying it's on the bottle also, including the cap?
Mr. Kolish?
Yes, Senator. Our brand logo and information, our location, et cetera, all those requirements, along with the government warning, is on the bottle itself, whereas the cap usually contains any information that would be a variable between products that we sell, such as alcohol by volume, which may vary by a point or two between, for example, a stout or a pale ale. And that information is handwritten on the cap.
Okay, but Madam Chair, so if you refill, if you put your product in someone else's bottle, are you required to label that bottle that it is your product and not theirs?
Yes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I just have one more testifier, and I believe there are a couple others.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Andrew Schmidt with the Minnesota Beer Activists, a consumer organization. We support these bills and any other bills that move Minnesota closer to the repeal of Minnesota's Sunday sales prohibition repeal. We have a few concerns about the retailers being left out of the conversation, as well as rural customers that don't live near any of our booming craft beer industry. You know, as things expand, hopefully we see more and more breweries expanding out into rural Minnesota. But right now, you know, they're going to be left out of the conversation when it comes to being able to support these great local businesses. So while I think it's a step in the right direction, you know, unfortunately, the folks live out in, you know, Hutchinson and Jordan and, you know, the other great cities in Minnesota, they're not able to make the trek to Northeast Minneapolis or Stillwater or Duluth to support these great breweries on a Sunday afternoon and grab that growler. So, you know, maybe that's something we can look at in the future. But definitely look forward to supporting these brewers and brew pubs on weekends. And hopefully someday in the future, we can support mom-and-pop liquor stores as well as Minnesota looks to the future and repeals the last vestiges of prohibition. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt.
Madam Chair, that's all the testifiers I have.
Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on this bill?
I'm sure there are.
Ken Rockler, are you? And Joe Bagnoli? Mr. Rockler, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Jensen, members of the committee. Ken Rockler with the Tavern League of Minnesota and the Bowling Proprietors Association. I'd like to just correct one thing that was just said previously, and that's that the idea of eventually going to Sunday liquor is not good for the Mon Paz. I don't have in my briefcase here a 79-page study from Colorado on what happened there when they went to Sunday liquor. And they have very protective laws of the liquor industry there. There you're not allowed to have more than one store. You could not have a chain, an MGM, a Total Beverage, a Haskell's. One store is all you're allowed there. When they went to Sunday liquor, they lost 104 stores, almost entirely the Ma and Pa stores, who did not want to or couldn't fund or find a way to open up on the seventh day. But with regard to the actual bills here right now about Sunday growlers, both in tap rooms and in brew pubs, I guess they're all kind of mixed together here. Two things. One is, I guess I'm a little offended that these bills, which came up originally and were passed on behalf of brew pubs, and then the Surly bill, I guess, was 2 years ago or 3 years ago. During that time, there was a lot of negotiation on this, and in particular, the growler bill, when it first came about, there was an agreement that they were going to operate under the same rules as all other off-sales. So I think we're going back against an agreement on that, and I guess I kind of resent it, to be honest. Number two is, I don't think it really affects the people that I have about whether or not they're allowed to have a refill or have the original container. But having been in the restaurant business for a long time, I'm very curious about how this is going to be allowed by the health department. one of the issues that came about in the original passage of the Growler Bill was to make sure that you had a sanitized product and it was sealed at the time. If you own a restaurant right now, you're not allowed to have people bring in food or beverage. They want to know exactly where any type of outbreak comes from. When you have a salmonella outbreak or I forget the name of the Colorado cantaloupe thing that came about. They want to be able to pin down where that happens. How is a brew pub allowing other people to bring in a growler? How are they going to control that? And again, I don't know that I particularly have an economic interest in opposing it, but having been in the restaurant industry, it seems like it goes against all of the health department's rules on bringing in and taking things out at that point. I would stand for any questions, and that's all I have to say with regarding these two bills.
Any questions for Mr. Rockler? Okay. Mr. Bagnoli.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli again with McGranche Law Firm on behalf of the MLBA and the MMBA. First, there's two bills. Senator Reinert has three bills here. The first two, I'm going to address the growlers, sale of growlers, off sale on Sundays last, but the first two bills, candidly, I didn't realize tap rooms couldn't be open on Sunday until it got introduced and I spoke with Senator Ryan and Senator Council. We don't really have, we thought that when the law was passed that was allowed. I'm candidly surprised it's taken this long to have a bill come to rectify it. We don't have concerns about that. With respect to the growler and how they're packaged, I've heard from frankly friends who have collections of growlers that they'd like it fixed. That's not an issue that we care about to the degree that it can help people not have collections of growlers. I think that's a good idea. It maybe needs an industry work group. I'm certain people could figure out how to do it pretty easily. With respect to the final bill that I wanted to talk about, the bill that would allow growlers to be sold on Sunday. As all of you have known, the conversation around Sunday sales has always been focused on the current state law in relation to how liquor stores operate. Consequently, when Senator Reinert introduced this bill, we were struck that it didn't focus on the operation of liquor stores. Instead, it focused exclusively on growler sales at breweries. As you know, Sunday sales of alcohol already exist. You can go to a bar or restaurant, and they are scattered throughout every city, every county in the state, and buy alcohol. You can also go to a farm winery, which are mostly in rural areas, and get a bottle of wine. So to be clear, it already exists in that form. We want to also be clear that we are not changing our position on Sunday sales as it opposing the changing the law with respect to Sunday sales in liquor stores. This proposal, the proposal that Senator Reinert has here today, has not ever been introduced, frankly, or even discussed. The first I think we even considered it or heard about it was when Representative Swedzinski introduced a bill or said he was going to introduce just prior to session. Consequently, the MLBA and the MMBA did not have a position on it. We discussed it when it came up a little bit and then introduced. We discussed it with our members and discussed how it interacts with the current law that focuses on liquor stores. First, we considered that growlers are a product that is, and Senator Reinert alluded to this, that is not currently sold in liquor stores. Moreover, growlers are a unique product that is sold in an odd-sized container. And that goes bad after a few days. The product itself goes bad once it's opened and actually goes bad even when it sits in the jar for a few days. So it's a very unique product. This has always made us, that fact, made us comfortable with the idea or more comfortable with the idea when it was first introduced to have growlers being sold by breweries and by brew pubs. Consequently, changing the day of the week that growlers can be sold, although it has a slight impact on liquor stores, it doesn't have a direct impact on liquor stores. Next, we considered that because growlers are sold only at breweries and they are not transported by wholesalers in trucks driven by Teamsters, and thus this legislation doesn't present an instance or an occasion where the government would be acting to change the landscape, the legal landscape under which businesses were established, and collective bargaining agreements were entered into. Third, one of the reasons we oppose changing the law with respect to Sunday sales and liquors is because it would be government changing the well-established playing field that and financial assumptions that over 2,000 small businesses relied on when they opened their store. This is not the case here. Small brewer industry is very new. As you see, they would like it. And sales of growlers on Sundays do not change the well-established laws that have provided stability and certainty for small business owners that own liquor stores. Fourth, over the last several years, since the passage of the taproom law, we have had increasing conversations and relationships with craft brewers. The rise of craft brewing in Minnesota has been exciting and good for the industry overall. I think when that taproom bill, I think Senator Gazelka asked me, on a scale of 1 to 5, what do you think, Mr. Bagnoli? And I said, or 1 to 10, I think it was, whatever the scale was. And I said, you know, we're hopeful, we're concerned, we're always a little bit nervous about change. We are hopeful that this change leads to good things for the industry and good things for our members. And it has. It's worked out terrifically. Last year, we worked with the craft brewers, and we've developed a as the industry's grown, we've developed a good relationship. Last year, we worked with the craft brewers and you, the legislature, to save the growler, to allow the breweries the ability to expand while having the ability to sell growlers. We've had considerable conversations with craft breweries in the past weeks and feel that this is another way that we can help them or we can support a change in law to help them with their business while not disrupting our, which in turn helps the entire industry. Finally, we are aware that there is a certain percentage of the population, I think some of whom you've been receiving a great deal of email, who don't want to go to bars and restaurants on Sundays, but only want to buy their beer for their when they drink on Saturdays and Sundays or Sundays that day, and prefer to get it in a container and drink it at home. We think that this helps those consumers that have that desire to achieve their to satisfy that desire on their part. In sum, at the end of the day, the only reason that we could come up with to oppose this legislation is that it represents a slippery slope or a nose under the camel's tent. This is an issue, and that's an expression that you folks hear all the time on all kinds of legislation. But it's a real fear. I think as you heard some of the, at least one of the testifiers said, he regards this, and I think Senator Reinert is saying this is a baby step or a small step towards it. And we are concerned because those advocating for this actually are advocating for something greater than we would like. But for us to oppose it for essentially a tactical reason and not a policy reason was something that we felt we couldn't do, especially when there was an opportunity or it would potentially help the craft brewers. We don't view this as a slippery slope, but rather as a bit of legislation to help other small businesses in the industry and thus help the industry overall.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, that's all the testifiers of which I'm aware.
Any further discussion? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there, you mentioned a study in Colorado. Do you happen to have that study that that you could share with us?
I have 79 pages of it here, the one from 2000, and I forget which year, comparison, my printer jammed this morning. It's online, by the way. The Colorado license or the report that encompasses everything. So if you want one half of it, I'd
or give me that that link again. Where it's found where?
Let me get the report. I'll come right back. I've got half of it right here. Okay, but by the way, just on the one other thought on your health department issue, which I do think you have with people coming and refilling growlers, why couldn't a compromise simply be that the brew pub that they bring it into, you know, they pay them a buck for it or whatever it is, and they'll sanitize it, and, you know, they can reuse it then. I realize it doesn't have their own name on it, but it's probably a way to avoid what could be an ugly situation in terms of the problem with somebody bringing in a unsanitized growler. I think it might be a compromise. I'll come back and I'll get that for you.
Okay, we've got hopefully an hour to go.
Right. And, Mr. Chair, since that addresses the full repeal, which these bills are not about, perhaps that can be done as a side conversation.
That's good.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I agree. We're not talking about Sunday liquor today. So any further discussion on Reinhardt's, Senator Reinhardt's bills.
Mr. Chair, I would move that the committee recommend 2029 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Yeah, how about the other one?
Okay. On the Reinhardt motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, I would recommend 2374 be passed for be recommended for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
And Mr. Chair, I would recommend 2375 be I would move 2375 be recommended by the committee for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
No.
Thank you, Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Wait a second, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to mention briefly, I just talked to Senator Reiner at the last meeting very briefly that these bills could use a few little tweaks in terms of drafting.
Yes.
I think I know what they're trying to accomplish. But
right.
If you see them again in the omnibus bill, they're going to be cleaned up a little bit.
Yes. Acknowledged. Thank you, Mr.
Clean
Chair.
Up. Senator Dahl, you have a couple of bills up. Would you like to take whatever order, 2090 is the first one I have on the list, so, and that deals with farm, wineries, bulk distilled spirits. Yeah, this is okay. Welcome, Senator Dahl, and you have a. An acquaintance, a friend of mine, that's going to be sitting next to you, Mr. John Maloney. Hey, you guys, you come forward and everybody leaves. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 2090, I believe we have, first of all, an oral amendment, and then I have a regular A1 amendment, if I could propose that.
Senator Dahl, did you wish to do the oral one first?
The oral amendment on line 2.22, eliminate $250,000 and replace that with $75,000. This is an agreement that was reached. The beer, you won't have to hear from the beer wholesalers again, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. I think this is, Senator Dahl, you're absolutely correct. I'm aware of this, and I think this at least gets you in the right direction, and if we need more a few years from now, we'll tackle it at that time. That's my opinion. Any further discussion on the oral amendment? Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Now you want the A1, Senator
Yes,
Dahl?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Okay. Senator Dahl, what does it do?
That was the only one.
Mr. Chair, I'll allow my testifier to explain maybe the amendment. If that's, are you able to do that?
DPS.
I think this was a. Are you aware of this one? Okay. This was. Trying to remember.
Mr.
Who
Chairman.
This came.
Let the council visit with us.
Okay. Yes. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. Members, it's my understanding that these are changes requested by the Department of Public Safety to the bill.
What's
about this?
Yes, that's correct.
Pretty much clean up. Is that your opinion?
Mr. Chair, I think that they just wanted a. It's kind of some record keeping. They like to keep track of where these wineries are, and I think this takes care of that.
Problem with that. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion fails. Senator Dahl.
So then with that, Mr. Chair, I'll just allow my testifier to explain a little bit about what the bill does, and then I think we can.
Mr. Maloney, welcome to the committee, and welcome back from Mexico.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
In the hallway, that wonderful suntan.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I am John Maloney. I represent the Minnesota Grape Growers Association. I sit on the board of directors for that association. It's an association of over 600 members throughout the state of Minnesota. We're grape growers and farm wineries located throughout the state. My wife and I own the Cannon River Winery down in Cannon Falls, Minnesota. And we started our vineyard in 2001 and opened up our winery in the fall of 2004 to coincide with our first harvest. couple of points about our industry. The in 1993, there were two farm wineries in the state of Minnesota. In 2004, we were the 12th permitted farm winery in the state. Today, there are over 60 farm wineries now permitted in the state of Minnesota. We've got over 600 growers that are members of the MGGA. There's probably several other growers as well. We're all growing cold, hardy wine grapes that can withstand our winters. The vast majority of these wine grapes were bred from the University of Minnesota's grape breeding program, things like Marquette and La Crescent. It's a wonderful little industry, and we're seeing good growth, and a lot of what you have before you today is either clarification and cleanup, or in a couple of cases, it's allowing for some growth. And I think to
could you recite some of the clarifications and cleanup? What changes? I think it's
exempt from excise tax.
I don't think it's controversial. Yeah, the at all. Tell the committee what kind of cleanup. I think it is truly cleanup language at this point. But can you elaborate, John, a little bit on what we're doing? What the cleanup stuff is?
So the cleanup, there's currently, there are some wineries in the state that are being charged an excise tax on alcohol that they're bringing in to produce a fortified wine. And the first, what we're looking for is an exemption to that alcohol that's being brought in. We consider it as an ingredient. That's the first one you see.
Is that a double taxation in your mind, or what?
That's correct. Yeah, okay, double taxation. The bulk distilled spirits and the bulk wine, they're really just definitions, nothing more than that. They're just defining what those are within the farm winery language. And the gallonage that we want, we've agreed to go to 75,000 gallons. The 50,000 gallon mark has been in place since the 1970s when this farm winery law was first produced or first created. We had originally, our committee had sat and worked on this for over a year, and we just took the 250, frankly, because it's the small producer limit at the TTB level, so that's the number we went with. We want to recognize that our industry is growing, and that will become a barrier soon at 50, so we'll agree and live with and keep peace in the valley, as they say, for the 75,000.
I think, Mr. Maloney, when you and I met a while back, I kind of suggested maybe that's a little high at that level, so I think that's a good compromise, in my opinion. And then if you get there and reach it, well, we're in session every year, so I'm glad you agreed to.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we're really concerned about the clarification, what you just mentioned. And
yeah, and I can.
How many wineries are there now? 60. 16 and
63. 63. We were the 12th in the state in 2004, seeing substantial growth.
Oh, great. I think a colleague, Senator Stumpf, has a winery too up in Northern.
Yeah, it's called Two Fools Winery in northwestern Minnesota.
I can't say anything. He's chair of the bonding committee. Okay, what, Senator Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dahl, I'm just curious about the excise tax. Is this excise tax a double taxation on everyone that it's involved with, or is it just a double taxation on the farm wineries?
Mr. Chair, I believe that this was just clarification. I believe that the federal law, we probably could operate without this piece in here, but is what I was told earlier, but maybe you could clarify this, and we just feel that we're clarifying something that's already in federal law, but maybe I'm bird walking somewhere else. I'll let Mr. Maloney answer that as well.
Yeah, that's what our approach is, that this is just clarifying that this is, it's simply an ingredient. These, when you produce a fortified wine, you're simply taking your wine and you're adding in a neutral grain spirit. Well, in order to do that, you have to purchase that neutral grain spirit. So it's an ingredient that goes into this product that has an excise tax on as it goes out the door. There's an excise tax paid on it, but we feel like we should not be paying an excise tax on an ingredient to go into producing that fortified wine. So we don't pay an excise tax on grapes or yeast or anything else.
Okay. Thank you.
Brown, I sure you agree with me that we like to reduce these taxes.
I'm all in favor of that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any further discussion from anybody on the committee? Archicus, welcome to the committee, back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Chris Jorgicus with Wirtz Beverage again. Mr. Chairman, there are two sections of the bill, sections 5 and 6, that have an impact on wholesalers of wine and spirits. The Minnesota Wine and Spirits Wholesale Association, I don't believe, has reviewed this language yet. So, Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, we'd like to be able to look at it, understand how it might operate. We had not previously heard from the Grape Growers Association about these provisions.
Okay,
we didn't have any prior consultation, so I think we'd like to understand how it works.
All due respect, I think this bill has been around for about a month, so. But we are not going to adopt it, as you know, today. We'll give you a little time, but I think we're going to move on this and put it into consideration in the omnibus bills.
Mr. Chairman, if we can just get back to you on that. Yeah.
You're free to work with the author, but okay.
Thank you.
Further discussion, further comments? Senator Dahl, would you like to make a motion?
Yeah, I'd like to move Senate File 2090 as amended be recommended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
And further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Did you want to take the University of Minnesota one now, Senator Dahl? Thank you,
yes.
Mr. Maloney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it, committee.
Senator Dahl, Senate File 2156. We've got about 45 minutes, hopefully, to go here.
We can do this in about 45 seconds, I think.
Okay, thank you. Any of y'all include? Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senate File 2156 really is, you know, we've had an experiment, if you will, a pilot program that allows Sunday sales at TCF Bank Stadium during the University of Minnesota football games. My friend here, Mr. Iverson here, can tell you that that's working well. Maybe even share numbers that incidents actually have gone down since those sales have been allowed. What we're basically is doing here in this bill is repealing the sunset. So that was supposed to go away, and the university has decided that it is working well enough that they would like to continue liquor sales at the university. I'll let Mr. Iverson explain any further or answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Todd Iverson, represent the University of Minnesota, and I just want to clarify, we play our games on Saturdays, and so we don't sell on Sundays. I handed out a four slides from a presentation that was given to the Board of Regents. With the legislature over a number of years, we came up with a two-year pilot project to sell beer and wine in the bowl at TCF Bank Stadium to the general public. And that was sunsetted. The sunset is coming up in July. We believe, and the Regents believe, that the program at TCF Bank Stadium is working well. We have some numbers in here. And just so you understand the current procedures, I've listed a slide there. The only thing I will say is with our friends that play in purple uniforms coming, we're going to be putting some bleachers in the west end zone, the current open air end, which is where we have been doing the point of sale. So we are going to be moving the point of sale out into the concourse, not down towards the student section, but up around the concourse from what was affectionately known as the beer garden. So that will be the one change that will occur. But if you look at the public safety impacts, you'll notice that we have not seen any spike in public safety incidences with these sales. And in fact, in the first year, we saw public safety instances go down. This is not unique to the Gopher Stadium. West Virginia experienced the same thing when they started sales. But the final thing I'll say about this experiment is that we received a fair amount of press for losing money selling beer in the first season. and we were able to renegotiate that contract with the vendor. We did make money after that renegotiation, approximately $21,000 after expenses, and last year we made about $180,000, $181,000 roughly. But I want to emphasize that this isn't about the money that's being made on the beer sales to the general public. This is really about our ability to market the premium seats at TCF Bank Stadium, and I'm happy to report that 36 of the 37 suites have been sold for next year, and all of our Loge premium seats have been sold. So this experiment has had the desired effect, and we appreciate the opportunity to come before you and hopefully continue it. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We've got to do this, but it strikes me that at $7 or $8 a plastic cup of beer, that you're taking $1 million and you net $21,000. But apparently that's been corrected. But
Mr. Chairman, there were significant startup costs around this, and that when we committed to the legislature to do this right. And I will be honest with you, probably overdid the security in the first year. We cut back on it in the second year. But we were very mindful of the fan experience and wanted to make sure that we did this the right way. And so that's part of the first year.
Security cut into the profit? Is that
what
you're saying?
We are responsible for the security costs at TCF Bank Stadiums. And the extra security that we brought on the first year was fairly significant.
There weren't many problems at all.
No.
And I think it's the right thing to do to allow
I agree.
General public properly aged to be able to do this. That's my opinion. I don't think at the beginning where we were almost trying to fence people out. But anyway, here we are today, and I think it's working. Mm-hmm. And any further comments from anybody? Okay, Senator Dahl, I think you're ready for a
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Senate File 2156. Be recommended for possible inclusion in the liquor omnibus bill.
Okay, on that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, aye. Motion prevails. Okay, Senator Benson, I saw you.
Mr. Chair, do you want me to do propane quick?
No. If it's quick, yeah, let's get that. Yes, thank you. You're sitting there.
Yeah, yeah.
And ongoing discussion.
I'm sorry, unless
you are right, Senator. Okay,
sorry.
Senator Dahl is on the committee, but
didn't know she was there. Mr. Chair, I know that we've had a good hour and a half or more on Senate File 2164. I think we have two amendments, and we believe that we have come to some agreement, and both are accepting of both amendments. So with that, we can basically introduce the amendment. I don't know the number of the amendment to the first one.
A7 amendment?
Sounds right. I'd like to move the A7 amendment.
Okay. Can we probably get that's a couple pages? Can we get a brief explanation? But let me ask the question. I asked you folks to work this out. And do you feel you're kind of there?
Mr. Chair, I do. Again, much of the A7 is really came from the propane industry. The A8 is one more thing that we asked for, and they've agreed to that. We know that there may be some tweaks based on what it does in the House, and maybe we can work those out in conference, but we are willing to talk. And again, we feel that we've come a long way to the propane industry, and we appreciate them working with us on this issue. And I really don't want to come back next year and see if there's still problems remain, but maybe Court here could just briefly.
Okay,
we did remove the cold weather rule that would apply to that and some of the terms of sale, but maybe he would like to comment on a few other things.
Identify yourself, Mr. Holton.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Court Holton. I represent the Minnesota propane industry, and the deletal in front of you, the A7 amendment, is very similar to the Senator Brown amendment, which was discussed at the full hearing on this issue. And it deals with the issues that were in the original bill and in the Brown amendment, which is price and fee disclosure, budget payment plans, purchase contracts, low-income discrimination is actually in an amendment that's coming. the terms of sale issues, and there is in this amendment still, but there's changes coming orally, I think, here in a few minutes. The short-term loan program and the front-load LIHEAP program are in this amendment, and I think that the department has asked that be deferred to some other time. Otherwise, it is the same as you heard in the more extensive hearing on this bill, and I'm trying to do my best to use up as little of your time today as possible. I'm not necessarily skipping over things. The other amendment, the A8, is different. It's a different amendment from when this committee started a couple hours ago, and we've been asked to allow it to go on. I mean, not that that it's our choice. I mean, you're the senator, is not me. And this is we're agreeing to this with the understanding that this needs a lot more work, and that we will keep talking about the language that represents the A8 amendment. I would like to congratulate the propane industry for stepping up. They probably were in a position where they could have dragged their feet beyond the deadline, but they didn't do that. They did the right thing. We started exchanging language, so the bill has been able to be heard here on the last day today. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. And would you like me to introduce the A8 at this time?
A8 first. Okay. On the A8 amendment, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Can we do the other one?
Yep. Okay. Where are we at here?
I can.
Senator Kazoka.
I don't know if we did.
Yeah, I just want to
Senator
make one,
Brown, I know you had some concerns.
One particular comment about this, because I've been trying to thank you, Mr. Chair, because I've been trying to think about what are we going to do next year, and I really appreciate some of the thought that went into that Section 8 about front-loading the LIHEAP program, because a number of those folks are people that are low-income. They're not going to be filling their tanks in the summer, and this program will help them to do that, which means we'll have other fuel available for others in the fall. So this is a great step towards dealing with the supply problem. Thank you for doing it.
Good. Senator Brown.
Mr. Chair, did we already do the A7 amendment?
I say yes, but I don't remember doing
sure.
it. Did we do it?
I thought so.
We just did.
Yeah. No, that was the A8.
We did the A8.
Sorry.
I don't think we did the A8.
Okay, for it.
Mr. Chair, you've got to do the A7 before we can do the A8.
Yeah, let's, why don't you move it again? And
Mr. Chair, I move the A7 amendment.
Okay, on the amendment. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. The A8 again. Oh, we did the A8. We were.
Do you have to be after, though, I think? Right?
Move the A8 again?
Yeah, it'll be harder.
I think so.
Oh, I don't think so, but we will anyway. On the A8 amendment, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
We're good.
I gotta check that out. Why the hell did it have to be in order?
You should have drafted to the A7, Mr.
Chairman. Oh, now I get it.
Where's
I'm
this bill going?
Very solidly. I'm wrong like that. But. All right. What do we need to do anything more?
Just one question.
Yes, Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator.
What's drafted to A7?
Yes. Does this then cover the issue of what's happened this last year with the distributors charging additional fees after the prepaid? And I'll wait for you, Senator Dahl.
It's sad.
Did you get the question?
Yes.
Well, of course.
Thank you. Senator Goodwin, if you look at the A7 amendment on page 2, lines 4 through 11, that is designed to address that situation if it in fact existed.
Thank you.
Where are we at on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I do want to maybe hear from Bill Grant from the Commerce Department.
Welcome.
You, Mr. Chairman, Bill Grant from the Department of Commerce, and if Senator could repeat the question.
Oh, I don't know if there was a question, Mr. Chair, but I know you did have concerns about Section 7 and 8. Maybe share those, and sorry we're learning about these on the fly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. Yes, Sections 7 and 8 were language that were both proposed by the industry to us. In the case of the short-term loan program, this is something that I think needs further consideration, and the department may or may not want to propose legislation to implement such a program next year. But at this point, we're not prepared to move forward with that. With the front load of the LIHEAP program for delivered fuels, the concern there is that we generally receive our federal appropriation in October or November of a given year. The front load program would ask the state to commit dollars prior to that on the hope and belief that the federal appropriation
Mr.
will
Grant,
occur.
This hasn't been worked out. What would happen, Mr. Dahl, Senator Dahl, if we took this out at this point and moved the bill along?
What is seven?
Take Section 7 and 8 out.
Mr. Chair, I know that's after Senator Gazalka said he just liked 8, but as we're talking, all of us here, I'm going to make that oral amendment to remove Section 7 and 8.
Senator Brown, you're...
Mr. Chair, I would like to hear from the propane industry on doing that. This is these are very important provisions to this compromise.
Mr. Holt.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Brown, these are ideas that did generate from our organization, and we had others about coordinating transportation and obtaining more storage in Minnesota. We think those things are all ideas, things that have to be done. We have to study. We have to understand the effects of the Bakken phenomena because we got more coming our way. And these two particular ones affect the department. The main effect of these two amendments is on the Department of Commerce. The loan program they just did in Wisconsin hasn't been around long enough to study it, and the LIHEAP upfront funding is an idea that's been around too. But if the department is saying that they are not comfortable going ahead with these things, or even if they think they're a good idea, the propane industry feels that it's not our position to tell the department what their business is, and we would ask that be reciprocated in our benefit.
Senator Kosoka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I saw this early, and my concern is I haven't heard any solutions for what's coming again next winter. And I saw this come forward, and I thought, okay, finally somebody's thinking ahead and trying to address some of the problems before we get there. It sounds like Mr. Grant is saying Commerce is concerned about the money issue. Well, maybe we can solve that. There's, according to the announcement today, there's still $650 million available, and we know that this is going to be a problem. And so I wish we could find a way to figure this out rather than just take it out, but I'll respect the wishes of the body here.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would rather see this bill tabled until it is worked out than... You often say it's the job of this committee to do the work. I would rather that we work all this out and pass it all in one bill than to just take out some pretty important provisions.
Yeah, it's got to meet deadline here today.
So it has
week.
To get through here.
It's
where is
get
it going?
Here, so. Can we work in progress?
Mr. Chairman, we're certainly willing to keep working on this. Yes.
Okay, we can we take them out, then it doesn't have to go to finance. But
Mr. Chair,
Senator Kosoka, and we can look at the House too, Mr. Grant, if you have some time here too, can't you? We normally, Senator Brown, you're absolutely right. We like to do the work here, but because of the deadlines, I think we need a bill. Yeah. And I would just ask you guys, They're guys and gals. Work in progress. And Senator Kasilk and Brown have a issue here. Not an issue, but they, I think we all would like to see it move along. And if it takes a couple more bucks, then we'll worry about that. But so we can move it out of here today and then keep it going.
Well, Mr. Chair, if we leave it in and pass it, then we've met the committee deadline, and it goes to finance, and they can try to work out whether they take it out or not. Because if it goes to the floor and we wanted to add this, there may be some cost to it, and then we're kind of stuck. Because that way, at least they have an opportunity to work it out in finance. And if they don't, you know, so be it. If it comes out, they can't find agreement, you know, so be it. Yes. But we're not losing anything by moving it forward and having one opportunity.
With this, with it in there, with 7 and 8 in there, is that?
That's Mr. Chair, I would draw my motion to remove 7 and 8 at this time.
Let's do it that way. Then the motion will be to pass it out and, to the Finance Committee. Is that your motion? Senator?
That is my motion, Mr.
Okay,
Chair.
I think that's a good understanding we have here. I appreciate the input. On that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator, thank you, Senator Dahl. Senator Benson, excuse me for your making you sit for a little while, but 2335 Sacramento wine sale by religious stores authorization. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Senate file 2335 is before you. I do have a delete all authors amendment to clean things up, put it in a presentable form.
Okay, let's do that. Senator Housley moves the A1 amendment to put the Benson bill in the order she'd like. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate file 2335, as amended, provides for licenses to bona fide religious book and supply stores for the sale of wine exclusively for sacramental purposes to a rabbi, priest, minister of church, or other established religious organization. There is a $50 fee for those who would like to engage in this type of sale. You'll see a letter from the Department of Public Safety. They are neutral on this. And I believe there is one person who'd like to make a brief statement.
Okay, sure. Any who would like to make the brief statement? I don't see the maker of the brief statement.
I believe his general statement to this committee is we would like to see everyone who sells alcohol to have insurance, but fundamentally, they're not going to raise a problem with this bill. And with that, my presentation is complete unless there are questions from the committee.
Okay, any further discussion? Senator Goodwin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Benson, what's the difference between sacramental wine and regular wine?
Its intended purpose and use.
But really, the structure of it isn't any different.
I don't understand that there's any variability in alcohol content. There are specific places that make wine for sacramental purposes, and then obviously it's clearly in how it's used.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Senator, who would like to move this? Senator Kasalka would move. Senate File 2335. Further discussion? Senator Latz.
Just a question here. I'm kind of looking at the language in this, and the wine could be sold to individual members of a religious organization who conduct ceremonies in their homes. Mm-hmm. That sounds like an awfully broad exemption from the usual liquor store restrictions here. I could walk in and say, I'm going to use this bottle of wine for Shabbat dinner at my house, and we're going to say a prayer first. So I want to buy this case. Am I understanding that correctly? I'm just trying to understand what...
Mr. Chair, I believe they'd have to be part of a religious organization. For example, I don't believe monks are included under the definition of priest because they are part of a brotherhood. And so I believe that is what the intent is. But if it would make you more comfortable, I would be willing to strike that language and perhaps talk with someone about how that could be clarified.
Let's try that language.
Senator Latz. Chairman, well, I belong to my synagogue, so I guess that makes me a member of a religious organization.
Yeah.
Anyone who says they belong to a church, I doubt they're going to be verifying any membership anyway. I mean, I'm not trying to be a pain. I kind of generally support the idea that you're doing, but I'm looking at this as an awfully big loophole.
And Senator Letts, I actually tried to find you on the floor today so that I could clarify, because I do not fully understand Jewish tradition and how this might impact it, and I apologize for not having connected with you earlier.
Well, no, I appreciate that. I don't think it's particular to Judaism. I think any religion that has any kind of a ceremony that they could say they conduct at home would be able to say, I'm Christian, I belong to a church, and I intend to, I don't know, do whatever they do at home with this wine.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Letts, I didn't mean to imply that this was a purely Jewish issue, the ceremonies in homes. It was more, it's ironic that the only person I could not track down on the floor today would raise this question. And I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I don't have a clarifying answer for that. This issue was not raised in the House during the presentation, and so I cannot resolve that based on the information that I have available to me right now. And so I will leave it to the discretion of the Chair if he would like to have this bill move forward and include in the omnibus bill, and I will work with Senator Letts on language that makes him comfortable.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I am looking at the rest of that sentence, which tightens it up a little bit. And I don't know if that's enough to be comfortable with or not. I'm just raising the question as I'm looking at the bill for the first time. And I do appreciate Senator Benson's effort to find me. Sorry I wasn't there to talk to her.
Mr. Chair, if Senator Letts can't help us find a solution, nobody can. So.
Okay, give him a lot of credit there, but
Mr. Chair,
I don't want that purpose.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Benson and I did talk about this a little bit on the floor. I'm just curious, and maybe I was out of the room for a few minutes. Maybe you already said this. I apologize. What's the need for this? I mean, why is Sacramento wine not already available to buy through the liquor store?
It is. It's a matter of convenience. This was brought to me by the Catholic Conference. It had been standard operating procedure in the state of Minnesota that the same place that a priest would go to buy their vestments or hosts that you would go to buy hymnals, that you could also get wine for that religious ceremony there. And so it's a matter of convenience.
Mr. Chairman, and then the current law looks like it's fairly broad, saying that members of religious organizations may import wine exclusively for sacramental purposes without a license. So how does this then change? And I assume that means, you are. I guess I'm not sure what you can do now under current law and what you would be able to do with the change.
Individual can import, a religious organization can import. This would allow a bookstore to, or a bona fide religious supply store to import.
I see.
As well.
Maybe I should ask the bigger question, Mr. Chairman.
What's the bigger question, Senator?
Is there some restriction on supply now to rabbis and priests and others? They can't buy at a regular liquor store? Why is this needed?
Mr. Chair and Senator Letts, it's a matter of convenience.
Like you mean like Sunday sales.
Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Well, she opposes it.
Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair, I would like to offer an amendment to strike the language on the individual members. So on line 1.9, after the comma, strike our individual members of religious who conduct ceremonies in their home.
Yep.
Just strike that between the commas.
On the motion.
Then I can't do it.
On any comment there, Senator Benson?
I have no objection, Mr. Chair.
Okay. On the Goodwin motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Further discussion on the bill? Would like possible inclusion. Senator Brown will move this. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Senator Letts, do you have... for possible inclusion.
You're up.
Senator Letts, Senate File 1809, Golden Valley Golf Course on sale liquor license authorization.
All those in favor say aye.
Okay, Senator Latz, Senate File 1809. You may proceed. You've got a couple of witnesses there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know that they all will need to contribute, but they're certainly available to answer questions. Golden Valley has a municipal golf course, and they often have golf events at the municipal golf course at Brookview. Those events, the organizations that are having those events would like to have the opportunity to make alcohol available as a part of their parties, basically. There's a clubhouse there that is co-located with a community center, and in fact, they utilize the facilities together for events. So they'd like the opportunity to make that option available to the event holders. That's the purpose of this bill. I do have with me the mayor of Golden Valley, Shep Harris, who's prepared to add a few comments, and then we've got two amendments that we'd like to.
We have, Mr. Senator Latz, we've done this before. I know we have a couple of times. And the last one I can remember is Cottage Grove, so this is not a new concept or anything. So, Mayor Harris, would you like to say a couple of words? I think we're going pretty good here so far. So.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. I almost said good evening. Good afternoon, members. I'm Shep Harris, Mayor of Golden Valley. I also just wanted to introduce here with me to answer any technical questions. We also have City Council Member Andy Snope, and we also have the Director of our Park and Recreation Programs, Mr. Rick Burno, and then the Manager of our Golf Operations, Mr. Ben Dish, in case there's any questions.
Yeah, I think we're all right, but I see a couple of Senator Latz, the A1 and A2 amendment. I'm told they're kind of cleanup language. Do you have any objection to those? I just got it myself right here, but.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't have the A2 amendment in front of me. I assume that's the community center language.
Yeah. Why don't briefly the council will tell us what they do.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Okay.
Mr. Chair, the A2 is just adding a community center to the premises the license can attach to, and I believe that's on the grounds of the courts. And the second one is the A1 is language I recommended to Senator Latz. It's similar to what we did for Cottage Grove in that this license is essentially the city issuing it to itself, so we need a little oversight from somebody else to make sure that they've filed dram shop insurance and that sort of thing. So this is language that cross-references some provisions of the municipal liquor code to provide just a little oversight from public safety to make sure that dram shop insurance, for example, is properly filed.
Mr. Chairman, I like both amendments, and I move the A1 amendment.
Why don't you move the A2? We don't have the A1 yet.
Oh, then I'll move the A2 amendment.
I don't have it. It doesn't have
that's the community center language.
This is a Senator Pappas. Yes. This is a trust me one.
Now we have the A1.
Well, I guess they're kind of both in the nature of author's amendments, Mr.
Chairman.
Kind
of inferred she didn't trust the author. But Senator Latz is a very. Okay, Senator Latz moves. I think we do the A1 first. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. The A2, Senator Latz moves. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Senator Latz, you want to move the bill for possible inclusion as amended?
Chairman, I move Senate File 1809 as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay, on that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you very much.
Metzen and a Jensen.
Senator Jensen, there's a Metzen one here that Senator 2332. This current law allows retail establishments to offer 5 samples per brewer per year. That's kind of a low number, so what this bill would simply do is change the 5 samples to 12. Colin Marsh is here. Maybe you could give us a couple of reasons why we should do this, or did he?
He's right here.
Oh, welcome, Mr. Marsh.
Hi. Mr. Chair and committee, this is Colin Marsh here on behalf of Almeida Public Affairs, representing Anheuser-Busch. And yes, the chair is correct. This is a one-word change, striking 5 as the limit for samples per retail establishment per year and inserting 12. Why the number 12? It's not a magic number. It just allows one sampling per month. And Mr. Chair, members, one more thing to add. I have reached out to stakeholders, and all have been fine with this change.
Who's fine with it?
No one. No.
No one.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Excuse me.
All right. Any discussion on this? It's 5 to 12. I don't think it's a big deal. Senator Dahl moves that this be included for possible consideration in the omnibus ticker liquor bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Jensen, where is she? The train is leaving the station. Anybody else on the Jensen bill at 2675?
Not on this committee.
We need her because...
her purse is still here, so the phone is, so she's potentially going to haul her bill.
Yeah, okay, then we'll talk. We'll get into this. If you don't mind, I'll sit here. This is the All-Star extension of the liquor time for the Target All-Star game to be played at the Target's field. I believe it extends the hours. I believe we did this for the Republican National Convention when I was here, and I don't think law enforcement, I believe they're all right with this too, as far as I know, but would you care to comment what the city of Minneapolis thinks about this and why it's a good thing to do? Or
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Gene Ranieri. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the City of Minneapolis. Chairman Metzen, you are correct. In 2008, the legislation was passed, I think, for the metro area to have extended liquor hours. And in our city, there was a few of our establishments did exercise the right to go to 4 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. In our city, we have not taken a position on this bill. We do like the fact that this bill does give the principle of local control, where cities in Hennepin County can make that decision. It will be for two nights, Monday night and Tuesday night. Monday's the Home Run Derby. Tuesday is the All-Star Game itself. We will be meeting with our partners, Major League Baseball, the Twins, Public Safety, to determine and make a recommendation to our City Council if we should offer these licenses. At this point, we have not made a decision, and I'll stand for any questions.
And the permit or the fee would be $2,500, which is kind of sizable, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's up to $2,500, and given the fact that it's less than, it's only 2 days, I think the City Council would basically take that into consideration.
Why not?
Normally, we like the Hennepin County or the city to endorse these things, and if we move this out of here, are we going to hear from the city before it hits the Senate floor, or what,
Mr. Chairman?
Or should we kind of insist on that?
Mr. Chairman,
the cities request these things.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is all the cities in Hennepin County will be responsible, and it's 46 cities.
Okay, that's Hennepin County.
Chairman, Mr. Chair,
Senator Goodwin,
can I ask why? Why is it all when it's just going to happen in Minneapolis,
Madam? Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, there are some of the hotel rooms around in other parts of the county will be taking folks for the All-Star Game visiting in. We don't have enough hotel rooms in our city to accommodate an event of this size, so there will be private parties, et cetera, in hotels in Bloomington, St. Louis Park, Golden Valley, and other cities in the county.
The problems, do you know, Mr. Ranieri, talk to me about the Republican convention. Was there additional problems that you know? I know that you weren't part of that because you probably went to the right one. I'm just kidding.
Mr. Chairman, I think that was part of that was rhetorical.
I think so.
Again, the convention in 2008
is a lot different than a baseball game or a baseball event, a sporting event. We did have high security for other activities that were occurring there. There were other demonstrations that were related to the convention. I can't really make a correlation between public safety expenses and extended liquor hours.
Pretty rowdy crowd, though.
That's a pretty rowdy crowd, though, that Republican does.
Mr. Chairman, it was spirited crowd at times, yes.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to check to see if they're going to be using all these hotel rooms if somebody might happen to stay in St. Paul. and what month is this going to be? Well, the light rail might be open, right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, we hope light rail is open.
Light rail's opening June.
It's supposed to be a June 14th. The game, right, is the 14th.
We might have to amend it, St. Paul, and Invergrove Heights, Minnesota.
I just would like to check with my city, sure, to see if they would be interested,
sure,
in this.
Sure.
So we'll make it Ramsey County.
Okay. What do we do?
It's part of St. Anthony. We'll move it.
We're going to move the bill.
I'll
Senator Pappas,
move it if you want me to.
I sure would. Senate File 2346. It's not Minneapolis. It's Hennepin County. I understand that. Further discussion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. I think we're going to make the 2:30 deadline, you guys, so you don't have to go home and pet your dog. And
one bill left?
Yep, Senator Jensen, the list. Hers is pretty controversial, though.
Do this.
No, I'm just kidding. Senator Jensen, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
2675.
Yes, this is Senate File 2675. I do have an amendment, the A3 amendment. This was amendment that was worked on with cooperation with the Department of Public Safety.
Okay, you can start. Somebody can start explaining the amendment. Does it get?
It's an author's amendment. It gets it in the shape so then we can have him talk to it.
We'll accept it and then we'll go from there. Senator Kasaka moves the author's amendment.
Okay, I have with me Todd Hill, and he'll walk through the bill.
All those in favor, signify by
saying aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Okay, now, Senator Jensen.
Thank you. I have with me Todd Hill, and he'd like to walk through the bill.
Thank you.
Why don't you run through the bill?
I will run through the bill very, very quickly. And I do have a handout for committee members. This is
I've seen you walk before, and you're pretty slow.
This is legislation brought forward by the Minnesota Restaurant Association. It really addresses four things. The first provision in the bill, currently those businesses that have wine licenses only are limited to selling wine of only up to 14% alcohol content. Throughout the rest of Chapter 340A, wine is classified as 24%. We're trying to make this consistent for two reasons. Number one, right now it is very difficult to find a red wine with an alcohol content of 14%, so businesses are having a difficult time finding red wines that they can sell. And we also, a sake is defined as a wine, and if you have a sake license or wine license, there is no sake that is at 14%. So this would just make wine consistent throughout the statute. The second provision would, last year the legislature adopted a provision to eliminate the 60-40 requirement for establishments that have a 3-2 liquor license and would allow intoxicating or full-strength beer to be sold at an establishment without recognition of 60-40. This would apply that change statewide, not to just Minneapolis and St. Paul as was adopted last year. And then the final provisions are for two things that are very common in the restaurant industry today but are not allowed. The first is the infusion of spirits. If you were to walk into a bar today, many times you'll see behind the bar pineapple or vegetables of some type sitting in a vat with vodka or some other kind of liquor. That is called an infused spirit. Currently, that is prohibited by state law, but it is very common practice. This would allow that practice to be lawful. And then the second change along the same line, many restaurants today, if Sunday brunch, for example, they will pre-make their Bloody Marys. That is also illegal under current law to pre-make drinks. And so this would change that and make that lawful as well. And that is all the changes. There is no opposition to this legislation that we're aware of.
I just said we heard that before. There's no opposition. Any further discussion? Hey, Senator Jensen, I think anybody in the audience wish to be heard on this? Senator Jensen, we're ready for a motion.
I move that Senate File 2675, as amended, be recommended to be included in the liquor omnibus bill.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. I want to thank the committee for your indulgence in moving stuff along. I think a pretty good job doing 20 bills, and nobody was cut short. What are we going to do? We have next Monday and Wednesday, I believe, we're getting some bills coming over. But no meeting tonight, so be here Monday. Meeting is adjourned.